Ranch House Studio on Southwood Drive in Lufkin, Texas. It's the Blind Handyman Show. Hello there, neighbors, and welcome to show number 171. This is September 19th, 2006. Good to have you with us today. Our host, but no, we're going to talk about building, repairing, and maintaining all the time, of course, with the blind in mind.
All right.
Our host, ladies and gentlemen, Don Shaw.
Hey, Mr. Tom,
hey,
we're back.
Good to have you with us. But man, I hadn't seen you guys in
forever.
It has
been a while, hasn't it?
It man. Really has. Don Patterson.
Yeah, and I made it, too. I actually caught a ride. And
boy, I
started out at noon and finally
Thunder
made it.
Ride.
You're
finally
probably
made it
the over. Only person who's ever told me they were anxiously awaiting my arrival.
Anxiously awaiting your arrival.
Yeah.
Especially after the description you gave a while ago.
My name's Tom Houston, by the way, but here he is, friends. Here's the creator, the producer of the Blind Handyman Show. Ladies and gentlemen, I give you Phil Parr.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much. Which teenage girl were you talking about? We've had a bad, it's been a really rough start here, kids.
When you get my age, you say
just
stupid
whatever.
Things, you know.
Say stupid things. Yeah. Well, you do. Hello there. Good to have all of us together. I think we were all together last time we did a show. I think we were all here.
I think we were.
I didn't see this thing here, but it's new CD player.
Yeah, it's lit up like
it
a Christmas
is.
Tree.
Looks, nice
I mean, looks real official. I mean, look it's real professional.
Boy.
Well, I think I'm going to buy another one. I like it so much. It cues. Remember I demonstrated how well it cues?
Boy, oh, yeah.
Just tight as it can be. Anyway, we're all here. Fall has come. To the Piney Woods. Finally.
Yeah, it has. Finally. Great day.
Last fall, it was 59 when I got up this morning, about 6 o'clock, 6:30. Yeah. 59 degrees, and that's a whole lot cooler than it has been. So my first point would say, been a being.
Yeah.
Do you know, you can, I've always said, and this sounds strange as a description or anything, but sometimes you can smell the season, I was sitting on the front porch today waiting on Mr. Houston, and it reminded me, it hearkened me back to the Texas School for the Blind when I was in Cottage K.
Yeah.
Clear sky laying out between the wood shop and Cottage K on a Sunday afternoon, wondering, pondering the universe and looking up at the sky, and it just had that, it just took me back there. That scent that, you know, we were there mostly in the winter, I mean,
in the
fall, and it's what it reminds me of. And you could just, coming out of the northwest, my house faces little slight off of north, but coming out of the northwest today was just that feeling of
dry,
winter time is not far away.
It's nice.
Well, it's it may not be, you know, we may not get really cold weather, but the sun sets now at was set yesterday afternoon at 7:21, and seems like just a few days ago, it was setting at 8:30. You know, it was daylight till damn near 9 o'clock.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you couldn't put your jammies on, which bothers me.
Well, in less than 5 weeks or give or take 6, we'll go back to daylight. Say, you know, we'll move spring forward, fall back.
We'll
we're going to be back on that, and then it'll be dark at
5:15, 5:30.
Yep.
But now they're changing something this year. What are they doing? They're doing it earlier or later.
We're going to that daylight savings time earlier next spring is the deal.
We're going back to
daylight savings.
We're on daylight saving time now, right?
Yep.
And when we change the end of October, we'll be back on what we would call Central Standard War Time. Remember what we used to call Eastern Standard War Time.
Yeah.
You remember that, Pat?
No, because the war was over time I got there.
Time you got there.
I mean, another one started. I'm sure I started it, but the big one was over.
Yeah.
WW2.
But, you know, talking about this, I have always said, and somebody tell me if this would make sense, instead of going up an hour and back an hour, up and out, why didn't they move 30 minutes and stop?
Yeah,
why didn't they
just
move
alone.
30 minutes and stay there?
I don't know.
I mean, how could that have screwed up the atomic clock?
I don't know.
I don't know.
That's strange.
But and you say, but next summer, we're going to daylight saving time later, you say, Don?
I think that maybe the first weekend in March or so, instead of the first weekend in April or the last weekend in March or whenever it is we go now. So
then the days will be longer earlier.
Yeah, longer, earlier, longer.
Yeah.
But they won't stay. It still won't be daylight at 10 o'clock. But
no.
It'll just be more for the springtime.
Yeah, just more of it.
Yeah.
I think we're still going back.
But in the fall, it goes quick because when they, you know, it keeps moving back and say by the end of October, sun will be setting at 6:45 and then all of a sudden it's setting at 5:45.
That's right. We'll just be getting extra few weeks in the spring of.
Then there are days. Then when there's just no point in even getting dressed.
Start moving the showtime way back in the until noon or something.
But you know, we get off on this, I guess, and it's probably off topic for this show. But I'll tell you what, I'm just a traditionalist. I think school ought to start the day after Labor Day.
Yeah.
And end on May the 31st. You know, the kids have already gotten their first quarterly report, they've already been in there 3 weeks, and then they're going to get these breaks in the fall, and then they go, and then they get spring break and all that.
Yep.
And I saw in Houston where there's some school there, and they were giving just an account of that one school's utility bills, and it was astronomical.
Oh, I bet.
And so if they would close maybe some of these schools in the hot summer and...
Yep.
Just minimize the usage. You know, you could keep it at 85 probably and salvage all of your equipment. Look at the money you would save.
Well, you know, this no school in the summer started so that the kids could pick cotton and it could help with the crops, didn't it?
Well, yeah, but still, you know, then they went to this rotating schedule because they said, well, everybody doesn't get vacations at the same time.
Yeah.
But really, they kind of almost do. Most people down here want a summertime vacation. They don't want to take a vacation. Or and if now spring break... The kids get out, but the parents don't. They don't get off their jobs, and so then they have to hire babysitters to where if everybody knew you're going to 2nd of September, you're going to school, and you're going to get out on May the 31st, you're going to get Thanksgiving, Christmas, and Easter for holidays.
Yeah.
And we're in a war we can't get out of, and every congressman's on the take, and the whole damn world's just going to hell.
That would be too simple.
That would, you know. But it is. Just everything's wrong.
Everything is...
Well, I'm against daylight savings time.
Are you? I kind of gathered that you were.
Again it.
That you're again daylight savings. But that's what we're on now. This is not regular time. This is daylight saving time now. All right. Well, it gets earlier and earlier. I guess we ought to read, see if we could. I know that some people are out there waiting waiting for us to solve their problems.
Oh, you know it.
Do you know anything about burning things in a barrel?
Well, yeah, I know a lot about burning things.
Okay, well, good, because you can help this guy out. He said he just picked up another 55-gallon steel barrel.
Yeah.
He's going to punch some holes in the bottom and around the bottom third to get some good airflow for better burning.
That'll do it.
He also was looking to put it up on patio blocks, and he said, what I have not figured out is what can I put inside at the bottom few inches to maximize the airflow that way for maximum burning. Any hot ideas, Robert Moore?
You know, if I was going to do this, I would drill the holes about 10 inches up around the bottom, 10 inches up, and I would take me a sack of sackcrete, and I would pour some sackcrete down in the bottom and pour some water in there and make a concrete bottom where it couldn't rust out, and put some holes about 10 inches up all around the edge of the barrel and burn to your heart's content.
It'd be there for a long time.
It'd be there forever. You know, there'd be no one. Daddy used to burn. We had a burn barrel out behind the house. There was a burn barrel, and every once in a while he'd go out and set it, burn the trash. I guess the stuff that the garbage guys wouldn't touch.
Right in the big city of Houston, huh?
Well, it was in San Antonio, out by the alley. They'd burn.
Man.
He'd pitch horseshoes, and he was good. My old man could. He was a horseshoe pitching fool.
Really?
Oh man, he could hit that ringer all.
A lot of them old timers could.
He was good at that. He'd stand and pitch those horseshoes, and an old barrel burning. I remember.
I never thought a burn barrel was very efficient. Jimmy, I always have to mess with them. I guess you could put some, if you had some old brick, rather than the sackcrete where you kind of make a solid bottom. I know you're trying to keep the barrel from rusting out, but
yeah.
I would put it up on the patio blocks, and then I would put like maybe some bricks or big rocks, and that would kind of give your airflow, you know, maybe put 10 or 12 inches worth of those, and like Phil said, then drill your holes. in the side, of course, when you drill the holes in the side of the barrel, that's really kind of what deteriorates the barrel. I mean, that's because it's that's very thin, really, material. But you can get a new barrel for five. Well, what with the price of scrap metal, I don't know. But used to, you could buy them for $5.
But it's going to fill up with ashes.
Yeah, and it's going to fill up with the ashes. Yeah, and then so you can empty it, you know, a time or two and kind of maintain it. But really, like I say, just putting maybe some rocks or something in it to kind of give it an airflow down there.
So I don't know. What do you have any answers on the list?
Well, no, I didn't print any of them.
Okay.
Well, in the cover, you know, a cover is probably more important than...
Yeah, to keep those ashes dry.
To keep
dry.
The ashes flying away. Because I know even this summer, several counties around us have had burn bans. I think they've reinstated it in Nacogdoches County. So,
well, it's again the lawfish in the city. I don't care where he is.
Yeah. Would the holes in the barrel at the bottom be better on the side or underneath?
No, on the side.
On the side.
Be better on the side?
I think, yes.
Yeah, I do.
Daddy had a barrel, and it seemed like it had something down there at the bottom that you could take off. I mean, it seemed like a round thing that I don't know where he got this burn barrel.
Well, somebody may have made him like a little incinerator.
Could have.
I have seen incinerators, real nifty ones, made out of a couple or three barrels. And like one of them, the bottom one, are where you burn, and then they might put a door in that, you know, just a door. But it has like a grill, almost like a barbecue grate. In there, and that you put your trash on to burn, then the smaller ashes fall through. So,
but see, that harkens back to that you were talking about the wood shop at Kay. Harkens back to that incinerator that Travis Edwards had.
Right.
And they had a big system in the building, pipes, big ducts running all through the building, and they would turn this thing on, and it would run, you know. And there was no way to kick the start capacitor out, so you had to pull it back real quick to keep the motor running without letting it go. Because you'd start it with a start capacitor, then you'd jerk it back real quick. The motor would run, and it would suck trash out into this thing. And I remember him talking about this cat or rat or something got in it one time and came whizzing out, you know, into the fire engine.
Oh, man.
Jumped out of the mighty incinerator.
Whoa.
And you could smell that burning, moist burning. That was kind of a fall smell.
Yeah.
Also, that old broom corn and nasty stuff. He used to lay on the rack in the shop and shoot rats at lunch. Because rats like that broom corn seed.
I bet they did.
They like to eat that.
Anyway. They had me, speaking of rats, they had me in the basement at Municipal Housing Authority in Louisville, Kentucky. And I would sit down there as a tool clerk, and a lot of times I was down there by myself, and I mean for hours. And so I would take a rubber band and get paper clips and see these big gopher rats coming into the basement there.
Wow.
Yeah.
And shoot at them. And it was fun.
So did you hit them?
I hit a few, yeah.
You hit a few?
Yeah, and you know, the funny thing, you would think their hide would be tougher than what it is. I mean, that paper clip would just go right through them.
And they were dead when that happened.
Yeah, for the most part. They wiggle a little bit after.
Wow.
Isn't that awful?
None of them ever turned around and said, "You son of..." You know,
no, none of them gave me the finger.
Big rats. We're talking big rats.
Pretty good sized rats, yeah. But you know, a rat can go through holes that you wouldn't believe that are smaller than they are.
I know. I haven't had any rats. If we don't have any rats, this will be the third fall we haven't had any.
There was a great discussion on the Blind Handyman here a while back about the rat zapper.
That's what next thing I was going to go to.
Read that to us.
Well, the question was, has anyone here used the rat zapper? Now, that was the first time I'd ever heard of one.
I'd heard of one.
I wrote back and said, no, but explain to me what it is. What is it?
Yeah, I read that. But
have you got the explanation?
Here's a guy that commented on it. He said, hi, I often get mice in the house in about October when the weather cools down outside. A couple of years ago, the mice seemed to be trap shy as they wouldn't go for the old-fashioned wooden Victor traps. An exterminator gave me some sticky pads saying that the mice would die quickly once stuck in the pads.
Yeah.
The first time a mouse got stuck to one of the pads, I found out that the exterminator's version of die quickly meant that the poor mouse would be stuck there still alive for several hours.
Yeah.
So I threw the rest of the pads away. I didn't want to use poison because one of the dogs used to chase mice, and I was afraid it would catch the poison ones. Finally, I searched the internet for a way to kill mice quickly and easily, and it didn't take long to find Rat Zapper. Ordered a couple of them, installed AA alkaline batteries, baited them with the included pet food, and electrocuted all of the mice within a couple of days. A quick web search shows that Rat Zappers now cost about $29 a piece and come with a money-back guarantee. Mark.
And they go in this thing, and when they get in there, they're electrocuted.
That's what they were saying on the list.
But those sticky pads aren't worth a damn, because you get a rat on one of those, then he's flopping around with a sticky pad, and the only thing you can do is hit him in the head with a tire tube.
Yeah.
We've already been there. We've been there, done that. We tried everything. We finally found the best thing we found to poison was a thing called Just One Bite. I think I've told you about this before. It comes in a little bag. You do not open the bag. You just put the bag up under the porch or wherever you think they are. They'll eat it, go hunt for water, and there that buddy is gone.
Yeah.
I wonder, you know, this makes you wonder about testing AA batteries with your tongue. I mean, how can they get that much juice out of a dang battery, you know? What kind of batteries does it use?
Alkaline batteries.
Well, they would use some step-up transformer that would
increase. They made a believer out of me.
I mean, you know, being the inquisitive guy, I'd have to stick my hand in there just see how much voltage it really wants.
Yeah, see how it would work.
How bad it would do, but experiment. If you're using a rat trap, the best thing to use it is peanut butter.
Yeah.
They love it.
Peanut butter.
Yeah. Where's that hum coming from?
I hear a hum myself.
And sometimes keep dropping out. Yeah.
Like that?
Yeah.
I know what that is. That's the gate closing to keep you from hearing the air conditioner. Let's see. That's Houston's mic with that little noise here.
Is that what it is?
I'll fix it.
Uh-oh.
He'll fix it. There we go. All right.
What else? You got any more? Houston, Tommy.
The what? Oh,
you have another one?
Here's a guy that says, "Hi, guys. Well, if the hot rod in the backyard brewery isn't enough fun, I've decided to slat about 320 feet of chain link fence. My across-the-street neighbor has an identical 6-foot chain link fence surrounding his property with white privacy slats woven into the fencing.
Okay.
Has anyone done this? Is it as big a pain as it first appears? Regards, Larry."
I haven't done it. What is it?
Well, I'm just make a comment. I'm partially sighted. If you knew how bad that slatted chain link fence looked, you may not want to do it.
It really looks bad?
I think it looks really bad.
What do you mean?
It just looks tacky.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, okay.
I've seen them with little plastic.
Well, it's almost like Venetian blind. Yeah. They go at an angle, catty-cornered across the fence, but it still looks like chain-link fence that's been...
It was looking
like your bicycle when you were a kid with the ribbons in your spokes.
Were you a chair caning project or something?
Where you put the thing in your tire where it
No, but I mean, if there was any other way, it could, and also there's so much light. I mean, so many visual things. It's not exactly private.
I guess the reason people do that though would be because they've had all this money invested in a chain link fence, and then they find out they want some privacy.
Well, absolutely.
But that's not going to give them any privacy.
It is, isn't it?
That's not going to give them any privacy, is it?
They claim it does. It would give them more privacy than looking through the chain link fence.
I guess so.
But you could still see, I would think.
Well, yeah. I mean, all of it I've seen, you know, I don't know if they have a... Well, he can give it a shot. It's just color clash. The chain link is galvanized. Normally they string this with white something or other, and I just never thought it was very aesthetically pleasing.
But, you know, I have a wooden privacy fence, I mean, all along, and Luann says you can stand on my porch out there by my swing and see it in Mr. Hearn's kitchen. So obviously he can see me there sitting on my swing, picking my nose while I'm swinging, you know, scratching my, you know what, while I'm sitting in my swing. He can see me. If we can see him, he can see me. And I have a 6-foot wooden privacy fence.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
Tells a story, doesn't it?
Yep. All right. I guess we'll go to the guest, Donald. Who is
Rick
the guest today?
Rick Kelly is going to talk with us. Man, a guy that's done just a whole lot of projects.
Yeah, this guy is supposed to be a really whiz at
carpentry, machinist. Just done all kinds of things.
All sorts of woodwork stuff. And we're going to put him on in just a minute, along with Don Patterson. Don Shaw, old Tom Houston, I'm Phil Parr, and we're the Blind Handyman Bunch. Hang on. Be right back. Northeast Pennsylvania.
Good morning again. I'm Bob Bartlett.
That was November 2004. Hi, this is Phil Parr, and this is November 2006.
We're going to do it again.
We're going to gather at the Sheridan Northeast in Houston, Texas, and have a big party. Opening ceremony Saturday morning. Cooking in the Dark with Dale Campbell and Cheryl coming Saturday afternoon. Saturday night, lots of dancing and great live music. We'll record a live Blind Handyman show Sunday morning. A live Blind Like Me show Sunday afternoon, and Sunday night more dancing and great live music. If all this sounds like fun to you, why don't you email me and I'll send you the details. My email address is phil@philparr.net. That's phil@philparr.net. We'll see you this November in Houston. Such lovely music. I hate to interrupt it.
It's
kind of bouncy and moving along. KXYZ.
Yeah.
All right,
Houston.
We're back. The old Blind Handyman, the Car Talk guys of ACB Radio and FTP Radio. The air conditioner came on there, didn't it?
Yes, it did. Good
it
deal.
Feels good. Really good. All right, Rick Kelly is our guest. Rick, sir, how are you?
I'm doing real good, sir. How are you this afternoon?
We're all right. We have Don Patterson and Don Shaw and Tom Houston are all here, ready to talk with you. You're in Houston, Texas, right?
Yes, sir, I am.
And we learned about you from your friend named...
Greg?
Greg Savino.
Greg Savino. He claims that you are just a woodwork genius, that you can do anything.
Well,
you think he lied a little bit?
He's only saying that because I didn't charge him for the work I did for him.
you probably are on to something there, I would say. But he was telling us about these stairs that you built him that were just amazing. I think you kind of showed him, got him started building them, showed him how, and he did some of the work actually himself.
Yeah, and he's a main customer for Sears tool shop now that I've got him going on woodworking, so I don't know how happy his wife is about the deal.
Well, that's all right. We think ourselves here of projects as reasons to buy tools. That's why we.
That's right.
You know, that's one of the reasons for doing projects. What is your level of vision? You're totally blind?
Yes, sir. Uh huh.
And have been all your life, or what?
Well, I had some sight through college many years ago, and good enough to ride a 10-speed, but. Then it faded. I have retinitis pigmentosa, and
it
faded out about mid-30s, and the lights went out. So
lights went out. That's one way to one way to put it, isn't it? The lights lights went out. But you were doing woodwork things before the lights went out.
Yes, I've been around. Power tools, wood shop, metal shop, mechanic shop, electricity for about 40 years, I'd say. I've never had enough sight to trust it running power equipment. It's what I had enough vision that I called it unreliable sight, because sometimes you would see things that weren't really there, or more importantly, you wouldn't see things that you needed to see. So I never really depended on my sight when it came to any type of equipment operation.
You depended on your hands and your skill as more as a blind person.
Hearing and
like I would.
What moving parts can hurt you, and what wouldn't?
Yeah, the same way I would, because I'm totally blind.
Uh-huh.
So it would be the same thing. And understand that you, I can't remember. He wrote me a long, kind of a bio thing on you. Did you add on a couple of rooms to a house, or build a house from scratch?
I built a house back in 89, 90. I have a shop up in Denver, full wood shop, and it's on private property. And I started out doing custom cabinet work for a guy back in 81, and I've been in and out of that shop since 81. I go up there every summer. He's getting on in years and can't handle the heavy work. And I came out with a line of cedar chests and jewelry boxes made out of hardwoods. And so I go up every summer and do enough of the big work that keeps him busy through the winter, you know, making trays and putting in locks and hinges and stuff like that.
Uh-huh.
But I do the main work of building cutting out the material and building it for him. A lot of surface planing. We buy our wood from Kansas, Arkansas area, or not Arkansas. What's east of Kansas?
Missouri.
I don't remember.
Missouri.
Yeah, Missouri.
Yeah.
That's right. We buy lumber from sawmill.
Mm-hmm.
Oak, black walnut, cedar, birch. And, of course, it's in sawmill rough. And my shop up there, I have a 12-inch surface planer and a 6-inch planer joiner.
Man.
So I'd surface all the lumber, get it down to 3/4 or 1/2 inch or whatever we needed.
Yeah.
And, build enough stuff where he could do stuff during the winter months.
To kind of keep him busy during the winter months while you're not there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes, it does. It does.
So you
spend a couple of months up there every summer.
You're fortunate enough to be able to spend your summers in Colorado and your winters in Texas.
That'd be great, wouldn't it?
That's one of the reasons why I go up in July and August.
Yeah,
that's that's the ultimate. That's what my wife and I have talked about. When, if I'm still alive when she retires, or if I'm not, she'll find somebody else to do it with, and spend winters this winters in
northern latitudes
somewhere.
Yeah, in Texas, and spend summers up north somewhere, which would be the ideal deal.
Oh, it would.
And he markets these cedar chests and things that you folks build.
Up there, yes, sir.
Sells them in a retail outlet or to?
Usually, he sells it on consignment. to different areas, Vail, Aspen, you know, places like that, up in the Colorado area. You know, and it takes the merchandise up and sets it in the shops on consignment. Mm-hmm. Also, quite a few little local newspapers there in Denver, Thrifty Nickel and stuff like that. It's kind of like our green sheet down here.
Yeah.
So a little advertisement there, but there's a lot of other things that we do up there. That shop keeps me busy up there. This shop keeps me busy down here. But I do a lot more work with plastic down here. My wife works for a daycare center, and she came to me once a long time ago and says, "Well, do you think you could, make a little set of binoculars or something like that?" And I said, "Well, what do you want me to make them out?" She said, "I don't know." So I have this problem where I lay awake at night sometimes just figuring out how I'm going to do something. So I came up with PVC, and that really went like a landslide because other teachers and other directors saw what I was making, and it turned out to be a gambit of different things for the daycare center that she works for.
Okay, so you would take a piece of PVC pipe and you would cut a small circle from it.
Well,
am I right or not?
Well, there are several different things I've made: fishing poles, binoculars, phonics telephones, and a set of scales. And it's just by using. I usually work in 3/4 inch schedule 40 PVC. And all the accommodating couplers.
Yeah.
Did you say
binoculars that look like binoculars? And this set of balance scales I manufacture for them sets up on an A-frame, and it's like the old balance scale to where you'd put an object in one tray and put another object in the other tray and see which is heavier.
I thought you said, this is Don, by the way, I thought you said something about phonics or telephones?
Yes, that's a real simple thing that really went over big with a lot of different of the daycare centers. I use 1-inch PVC pipe, and I cut a 3-inch piece off of that. And on each end of that, I put a 90-degree elbow on that, and it makes a little... Have you ever put a seashell up, big seashell up to your ear? And, well, it really assists the kids, the younger kids, with their phonics, because they can hear their S's and T's and D's.
They read to themselves. Yes. I went to Grandparents' Day here in the Lufkin Independent School District last week, I forget the day, and every little child in this class of 21 kids had a little, it looks like half a P-trap almost, and they're holding it up to their ear. They can read to themselves and hear what they're saying, and nobody else can hardly hear them.
Yes.
And it's, interesting. Yeah, I wonder if your work may have found its way up here.
I don't know. I've never thought of using the P-trap. But
well, I know it looked, I mean,
I wouldn't
maybe
have
like,
to do any work on that except make a cut.
That's true.
Well, no, this it looked like PVC.
Yeah, like a PVC
P-trap. I don't know if someone made it, but...
P-trap.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But it was an interesting concept, and I tried it, and it was like you said, that somebody said, well, it's the seashell effect, but you can actually, like, talk out loud, but nobody else can hardly hear you.
Yeah.
On that P-trap, they would have had to put a sleeve into the long end of that,
right.
A 90-degree on that, because then you talk straight into the mouthpiece, and it... curls back around and comes into your ear at 90 degrees.
Right.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's a good idea. That saved a couple of steps, but I think that P-trap costs a lot more.
Probably,
than my 1-inch PVC pipe and two elbows.
So why are you using Schedule 40 rather than the regular PVC?
It's just more sturdy. I also manufacture what they call a sand and water table for the daycare places, and I make two different heights of them. One that's about 18 inches high and one that's about 24 inches high. And I go to Walmart and buy these trays that are about, I'd say 14 inches from front to back, probably 20 inches left to right and maybe 6 inches deep. And I go around that unit, and then I make legs that sit under the unit to where that can
uh-huh.
sit up in a classroom, and they can put water in it, or they can put sand in it, or they can put shredded paper in it, and do a lot of different things like that. The one thing that they were doing with that is that when I made these fishing poles, and make them out of PVC, and they'd have little eyelets screwed into them with string running, you know, just like a regular fishing pole.
Uh-huh.
And on the end of the string, I'd tie on a magnet. And the teachers would, you know, cut out fish and stuff like that and put a plastic coating on them and put a paper clip on them, and the kids, with eye-hand coordination, would, you know, go fishing for that fish.
Yeah.
In that, so.
What an idea.
But, and I also manufacture some things out of wood for them. Do you remember the old mailbox that had the dome top on it, where you pull the door out in the front to drop your envelopes in? And do you remember those?
Yes, I do.
I manufacture one made out of MDF, which is medium density fiber.
Yes, sir. I know.
And also, this have you ever seen this bendaboard?
No.
It's you can get it in 1/4 inch or 3/8 inch thicknesses, and it's a piece of plywood that has multiple grooves on one side, which allows you to take that sheet and bend it. And that's how I make the curved top on these mailboxes. And the mailbox has a footprint of about 16 inches, and it stands up about 30 inches high. And so the kids can, you know, when they study about the U.S. mail, you know, they've got a mailbox to play with. So.
Now, you sell these to this daycare center.
Yes, I do.
They buy them from you.
Yes, uh-huh.
So this is your wintertime occupation.
Yes, sir, uh-huh.
And in the summertime, you're up helping this guy with his cedar chests and trunks and things that he builds and sells up there.
Well, if I want to get into any kind of elaborate things, I have to go to Denver to do it because I've got twice the equipment up there.
He's got the tools.
Pardon me?
The guy in Denver has the real tools, has the good stuff.
Well, we both do. It's both our shops.
Uh-huh.
It's Houston
there, but
is.
We've got anything from wood lathes to overhead drum sanders.
Wow.
12-inch radial arm, 10-inch table saw.
Man, you have got a setup up there.
Joint-o-matics.
So Houston is not your home originally, right?
Pardon me?
Is Houston your home originally?
No, I'm a Denver native.
And then came to Houston. Ah, you must have met your wife here.
Well, I didn't meet her. I married an old high school sweetheart that
uh-huh.
I hadn't seen for 20 years. And,
mm-hmm.
and I started calling her, and that was about once of her holidays, and then that got down to once a month, then once a week, and then several times a day. And when my phone bill got up to $500 a month, I figured it'd just be cheaper to move down here and marry the woman.
Yeah.
That's what I did.
You chased her till she caught you.
Yeah, I'm trying to talk her back into Colorado, though, because she's born and raised in Colorado. So I'm trying to talk her back into Colorado, but I'm not having much luck.
And you're able probably not to make a fabulous become a filthy rich doing this, but you're actually able to sustain yourself and make some money doing these.
Yes,
doing these.
But the thing is that not only the problem that I have is that any small woodworker has is that the price of materials is so incredibly expensive.
Yeah.
That your average person just doesn't want to spend the money to do it, and you can put in some good craftsmanship. These cedar chests that I build and jewelry boxes are all dovetail corners. There's no nails or screws in them at all. It's all router work. It's all dovetail corners, dado. The glue joints and stuff like that. But
mm-hmm.
your average person, unless they're experienced with woodcraft, don't see that the time and that it takes to manufacture something like that. And they also don't consider the expense of the material. We were real lucky when we went and bought our wood from these sawmills, and that we picked up oak for 90 cents linear foot, random width. Okay, and nowadays oak is going for more than $4 a board foot.
Whoa! I didn't realize that. Good heavens!
And you know, and we work. I build cedar chests and jewelry boxes out of birch, black walnut, oak, cedar. That material is just so incredibly expensive. And since I've come down here, I don't work with a lot of hardwoods because I haven't found a sawmill yet that I can, you know, get the material. The sawmill rough is a lot cheaper to buy, but you have to have the equipment to finish that stuff.
To make it into actual boards.
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And PVC pipe is still relatively cheap.
It's very, very inexpensive, especially the pipe. You know, is still just pennies per foot. The thing that costs you on PVC stuff is all the elbows and tees and all the couplers.
Yeah.
Is where you spend the money on PVC stuff. Mm. And the bigger you go, you know, if you go up to 1 inch, inch and a quarter, inch and a half stuff, you can really spend, you know, you can spend $1.50 on an elbow if it's a 2 inch.
Really?
You know, so that stuff adds up, you know. And so then you try to figure in your time, you know, and what is your time worth? And you don't really get, I make a cash register for these daycare centers that has 115 pieces in it. It takes quite a while to manufacture, and it's very authentic look, and it even has a keypad to it.
You make
a pull-out drawer that, you know, has four compartments for bills and four compartments for change, and even has a display window for when you ring up a sale.
Man,
and it takes me a while to manufacture that thing.
I bet it does.
But if I was to charge, if I was to figure my time in at, you know, even $10 an hour to manufacture that, they wouldn't buy it.
Yeah.
Because they wouldn't want to spend that kind of money on it.
They couldn't afford it.
Basically, what I do is I take my materials, and this was good for a person doing woodworking back in the 70s or 60s, and I take my materials and I multiply it by 3, and that's what I charge.
Mm-hmm.
So that says that I'm working for a couple bucks an hour.
Yeah,
but, you know, if you love the work, you know, what are you going to do?
Now, this cash register, did you design this, or did you buy a design, or buy one and take it apart?
I lay awake at night and think stuff up. you don't want to ask my wife about
cash
that.
Register. I would love to see one of those. Are you going to be in Houston in November?
I was just going to say, why don't you come to the gathering in November?
Are you going to be in? You going to be in Houston, Texas, in November?
Me?
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir.
Well,
man, you know,
I need to get a hold of you because I sure would like to see one of these cash registers. We're having a little gathering in November, a blind handyman gathering at the Sheridan out by the airport, the big airport. Uh-huh. And we might be able to get you to bring one out there at $2 an hour. That's about. And I sure would like to see one of those. Maybe you could.
Yeah, it'd be great to meet you and talk to you.
Show us a few things. We'll get in touch.
Okay.
Yeah, we'll call
between
you
now and then. And so it's this is winter time, and of course we spend this in Houston. This fellow in Denver that you or in Colorado that you go. What is he a sighted person?
No, yes, he is.
He's fully sighted.
70. He's almost 80.
Yeah.
He has real severe arthritis, so I see him in the shop maybe a couple hours of the day. But mostly, you know, I'm in there, you know, and basically it's a 3-car garage.
There's just lots of things.
3-4-car garage.
Yeah. Lots of things he can't do. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I wonder who that is.
I wanted to let some of your listeners know. People might be curious on how I measure.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure you guys, being totals, and know of the Rotomatic.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Do you understand what it is?
I don't know what a rotomatic
okay.
is. You're going to have to tell us.
It's a measuring device that a blind person can use. I bought one in my lifetime, and they wanted so much money for it. When I was a machinist for Borg Warner, I manufactured a whole mess of them. What it is a piece of 3/8-inch drill rod. And what you do is you cut a 6.5-inch piece of that, and you put it in a lathe, and you thread that 16 threads per inch, okay? And then you put it on a Bridgeport milling machine, and you flatten one side, flip it over, and flatten the other side, except for every thread that's at every half inch, okay?
Oh, I got you.
Now, then you take a piece of flat square stock, drill a hole in it, and tap it for 3/8-16. So one complete revolution of that square nut on that rod
will take you a half inch.
Of an inch.
Okay. One complete revolution will take you
one
an inch.
One complete revolution is 16ths of an inch. Okay.
Okay.
So a half a turn is a 32nd. A quarter of a turn is a 64th. With that measuring tool, I can get within a 64th of whatever I, you know, need to do.
Really fine measurement.
Okay, now, at one end of this piece of threaded stock, you drill and tap a hole, put a set screw in there, and then you start manufacturing extensions. And I make those out of aluminum because they're just lighter weight. And I have a 6-inch, a 12-inch, and an 18-inch extension, and a 48-inch extension. So I can get a measurement of more than 8 foot within a 64th of an inch when I want to measure something.
Wow, that's...
Okay, that's how I get my measurements for length, okay? Up in Denver, I did a lot of work, especially in cedar, through a surface planer, 12-inch surface planer, getting the wood down to proper thickness, because my cedar chest... The inner wall is 5/8 cedar. The outer wall is 5/8 whatever wood you want it out of, oak, black walnut, whatever. Okay, to get that thickness, when I was a machinist, I gathered up a bunch of key stock that is square steel that is used to fixate a gear blank on a shaft. Okay, you have a groove in there, so you put this keystock in there so your gear won't turn. Well, I got a bunch of different sizes of keystock and cut them into 3-inch lengths. And so for measuring thicknesses, I have a set of what I call Jill blocks in my toolbox that start at a 16th and go up to an inch and a half.
I got you.
1/8 of an inch. Okay, so you know, if I want to see if something's 5/8 of an inch thick, I pull out that 5-inch wood steel bar.
Yeah, or a 1/2 inch and an 1/8 of an inch.
Well, but I've got a 5/8, so I don't
okay.
have to use two.
Yeah.
You know, but there are times when I have to use two because I only went up to 1 1/2
yeah.
on my bars. So if I need 2.5 inches, well, I get out the 1.5 inch and the 1-inch block and put them together. And I want to tell you that it's kind of funny. This guy that sited up in Denver, I had to make him a set because when he used to run the surface planer, he figured out that he could feel 10,000 a lot easier than he could see it. And if you're running a dado groove, a 1/2 inch wide in a piece of oak, and you want to put a 1/2 inch board in there, if your 10,000's over, it's not going.
Yeah.
You can't pound it in there.
Yeah.
You know, not on hardwood. You have to be right there.
Exactly.
Or just, you know, a couple thousands under when you're talking hardwoods, you know. So I got him using geode blocks. He closes his eyes and feels it.
Instead of measuring with some sighted measuring tape device or
right.
something,
he's read over the wrong edge of that measuring tape
yeah.
a few times and gotten wrong measurements. I was his cabinet maker when we built this house. He taught me an awful lot about rough-out construction. He is so good at it. When we'd go to set doors in this house we built, there was no shimming necessary because all the studs
he was that good.
Were that true and that parallel. that there was no shimming needed. You put in your door casing, you set your door. That's all you had to do.
Well, I'll tell you what.
He taught me a lot about that, and I spent 1,000 hours 1 year making the cabinet. This house is 3,400 square foot, and I spent 1,000 hours building cabinets for that entire house. Kitchen, bathrooms, bar room, laundry room.
Man.
And we did a limed oak where I used oak veneer MDF, or actually it was a high-density fiber board with an oak veneer, and then solid oak facing, which I put on with tongue and groove glue joints instead of any kind of nails or anything like that.
Let me ask you this real quick. What age are you? How old are you?
I'm 55.
You're working too hard. You're working too hard and thinking too much.
Sometimes, I tell you what, sir, sometimes when I get up in the morning and crawl out of bed, I'll agree with you.
you're about the same age. I'm 65, fixing to be 66, and Dolly's about your age.
Yeah,
53.
We're about the same age, yeah.
54. All right, so we are out of time, and we're going to go, but let me get in touch with you, and maybe we can get you to come out to our Houston gathering and talk to us a little bit and show us some things you built, and especially that cash register. I'd love to see that.
Yeah, right, bring some things. And
well, thank you, gentlemen, for letting me be on your show. I am not any kind of amazing person or anything like that. My first teacher was my father, and I like to work, and I still have all 10 fingers.
Well, you sound.
The guys asked me, "Well, how do you do that?" And I said, "Well, I work really good if I close my eyes."
I'm very careful. you've been a wonderful guest, sir.
Great guest.
We thank you, and we'll visit with you today or two. All right.
Thank you, gentlemen.
You might have gathered, we have a live audience today.
We have folks from all over the nation. A lot of folks from in Northeast Pennsylvania. That's
good morning again. I'm Bob Bartlett.
That was November 2004. Hi, this is Phil Parr. And this November 2006,
we're going to do it again.
We're going to gather at the Sheraton Northeast in Houston, Texas, and have a big party. Opening ceremony Saturday morning. Cooking in the Dark with Dale Campbell and Cheryl coming Saturday afternoon. Saturday night, lots of dancing and great live music. We'll record a live Blind Handyman show Sunday morning, a live Blind Like Me show Sunday afternoon, and Sunday night more dancing and great live music. If all this sounds like fun to you, why don't you email me and I'll send you the details. My email address is phil@philparr.net. That's phil@philparr.net. We'll see you this November in Houston.
So you figure you can just call up here anytime, we'll just put you right on the air, huh?
Yeah, man. Actually, I was wanting to talk to old Kelly. He was saying, I was wondering if he had heard of Houston Hardwoods to pick up some lumber and stuff at.
I hadn't thought about that. He was looking for someplace, wasn't he?
Yeah, when I heard him say that, I thought, you know what? I need to give him a call. I don't know if he may know about him or not.
Well,
but you can get lumber any way you need it there, you know, finished all four sides or rough or whatever.
I was kind of scared to pot you up because I wasn't sure if that might have been a bill collector or something. It could have been.
Somebody going to repo the old mixer, you know, or something.
Yeah, take away the recorders.
Right. We don't need that happening now.
Is it time for the theme already? Are we through? I guess this is pretty much it. Dale, you called a little late. I should have put you on.
Oh, that's cool, man.
Listen,
I was sitting here.
So what's for dinner, Dale?
I was sitting here bringing bids in. We're doing an online auction for the scholarships from Ann Morris, and
yep.
I've been processing those and just listening to you on FTP and enjoying the show and your music.
When does all this auction stuff start?
The auction started last Friday, and it's going to run until Tuesday the 26th.
And tell us how to get there very quickly. And
we'll go to blindmysmart.com and click on the auction barn.
Blindmysmart.com.
Okay. It's just kind of Anne's farewell. It's a lot of single, just stuff she had left over from when she sold out, and she's trying to get rid of it, and she's letting the scholarships be the beneficiary.
All right, Dale. We'll talk to you in a day or two.
Looking forward to it. Later, y'all.
Bye-bye. Campbell, always getting those plugs.
Yeah.
For Blind Mice Bar, have you noticed that? Eh?
What a deal.
What a show. What a guy. Rick Kelly.
Yeah.
Is that fellow's name. And he's quite a guy. We don't have any business doing the show. He ought to be doing the show. Certainly doesn't need us. We didn't even talk about the house he built.
Yeah, I didn't even get into that. We got to call this guy back again.
We'll have him back. But when he's absolutely for real, because we know somebody that knows him. Other than Dale Campbell.
Dale Campbell.
Rick Sabino knows him. And Rick is anything but phony. All right, guys, another one, 170-something, 171, I guess.
171.
Houston?
Yes, sir?
You're going to make a phone call for me next year. I'm going to run the board.
Yes, sir.
That'll be a good trade-off.
That'll work.
All right, we'll get off FTP radio. Let's see how many listeners we have. Let's check that. Let's see.
Well, Dale's probably hung up now.
He was listening. He's probably number three. I've forgotten how to do this. Let's see. Let me see.
Link what's up. Link for your information. Link up TP Radio 3 participant file PAR 692. Gordy.
See, Gordy, that's your brother.
Gordon.
That's Brother Gordon.
That's your brother.
How many listeners?
What a deal. One.
Will be our
We're going.
Total
week, one.
We're going. Thank you, Tom Houston.
You're certainly welcome.
Don Patterson.
Yeah. All right.
My brother Don Shell. We'll see you folks next week. I'm Phil Parsisa, the blind man, as he picked up his hammer and saw.